I'm reading in the New King James, and this is what it says. So it was, when the king's command and decree were heard, and when many young women were gathered at Shushan the citadel under the custody of Haggai, that Esther also was taken to the king's palace. Now, can I stop there a minute? A lot of people say that she was taken by force. But if you look at verse 15, it says, when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter. You see, her cousin adopted her. And the very same word is used there. He took her. Well, that's not by force, is it? So, quite honestly, I don't think that Esther was taken in here by force. She was taken. She was led to the king's palace, into the care of Haggai, the custodian of the women. Now the young woman pleased him, and she obtained his favor. So he readily gave beauty preparations to her, cosmetics, besides her alliance. Would you like that, ladies? Would that be useful? Cosmetics besides your alliance? You say, Derek, would be very useful. Well, maybe it would. But that's an interesting little detail there. He immediately liked her. Then 7 choice maidservants were provided for her from the king's palace, and he moved her and her maidservants to the best place in the house of the women. Esther had not revealed her people or kindred, for Mordecai had charged her not to reveal it. And every day, Mordecai paced in front of the court of the women's quarters to learn of Esther's welfare and what was happening to her. Each young woman's turn came to go in to King Ahasuerus after she had completed 12 months' preparations. Hey, how long did it take you to prepare to get out of here tonight? Oh, I heard about a woman who didn't like cosmetics and thought Christians shouldn't have them. And you know what she said? She said, do you know things have got so bad the preachers are even wearing hair oil now? Well, she wasn't talking about me. Preparations for 1 year. That's what it says. 1 solid year, according to the regulations for the women. For thus were the days of their preparation apportioned. 6 months with oil of myrrh. Oh, the thought of it. And 6 months with perfumes and preparations for beautifying women. Hey, what would you look like after that? Thus prepared. Oh, yes, indeed. I like that statement. Thus prepared. Each young woman went to the king, and she was given whatever she desired to take with her from the woman's quarters to the king's palace. That's being like let loose in Herod's and not having to pay anything, and take what you want. Take whatever she would like. She could take with her from the woman's quarters to the king's palace. In the evening she went, and in the morning she returned to the second house of the woman to the custody of Shaz-Gaz, the king's eunuch who kept the concubines. She would not go in to the king again unless the king delighted in her and called for her by name. Now when the turn came for Esther, the daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had taken her as his daughter, to go in to the king, she requested nothing but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian, advised. And Esther obtained favor in the sight of all who saw her. So Esther was taken to King Ahasuerus into his royal palace in the 10th month, which is in the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. the king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins. So he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king made a great feast, the feast of Esther, for all his officials and servants, and proclaimed a holiday in the provinces and gave gifts according to the generosity of a king. When virgins were gathered together a second time, Mordecai sat within the king's gate. Now Esther had not yet revealed her kindred and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. That's all we read. In many ways, there is not a more powerful creature on earth than a woman. Women have more strength in their looks than men have in their laws. And women have more power by their tears than men have by their arguments. Victor Hugo, the French novelist, said, "Men have sight, women insight." You say, Derek, you're a romantic. Am I? I know I don't look one. But have I too romanticized a view of women? Well, maybe I am a romantic, or maybe I'm not. But I know this one thing is true. If you, sir, want to have a pleasing wife, you must first be a loving husband. I like the words of Florence Litterer, very famous American Christian writer. Mark these words carefully. She wrote them basically saying, here is a woman addressing men. Now listen, here's a woman talking about us. Fellas, when you criticize us, we get worse. When you compliment us, we get better. When you try to change us, we won't budge. When you accept us as we are, we try to improve. When you don't help us, we're ripping mad that you are sitting. And when you're willing to assist, we will insist that you sit down. When you pick on the children, we think you hate us. When you are positive and encouraging, we know that you love us. When you're too busy to listen, we nag and ramble. When you set aside time to converse with us, we condense our comments. We're really so easy to please when you love us. You can turn our whole lives around when you let us know that we come first. What is it about a woman that would seem to be special in her personality and psyche in comparison to a man? Now, these cameras are watching me very carefully. They're almost talking and saying, "Be careful, preacher, because smoke could come out from behind them in a minute." I'm in dangerous territory. Of course I am. But I think that Charles Swindoll put it very well when he said that women have four qualities that are God-given strengths. And they seem to have more of this quality than men do. Number one, intuition. There it is in your notes, a sixth sense enabling women to see through situations. Men are very analytical, but a woman doesn't sit and analyze all night. She can see through a thing at 40 miles distance sometimes. How I have proved that in my life. Men, listen to a woman when she's talking. And she is giving her viewpoint. Because you will find that Christ constantly commended women for their intuition. The disciple said, he's too busy, he wouldn't have time for your children. But they saw through those busy men to the heart of the eternal. And they brought their wee kids to Christ. And they're still doing so. Still doing so. Millions of them. Intuition. I think that a woman, by and large, is able to endure more pain than a man. Having been present at the birth of my first child, I speak from experience. The sister in the operating place we were, or whatever, labor ward or whatever it was, she said to me, Mr. Bingham, most husbands leave at this point. What she really was saying, leave unconsciously. And I was very moved. I advise you fellas, if you're having a child in your family, you and your wife, you go along and be present at the birth if you can be. I was awful glad I missed the twins. Because the pain is incredible and the joy at the end of that pain is even more incredible. And we really got to remember that women are exceptionally brave. A lot of us at the sight of blood would... I'm going to start talking and you'll be conking out in a minute, some of you guys. But it is true that women have a tremendous ability to endure pain. And very often they live longer. That incredible ability to handle pain, to stay at a task against insuperable odds. And I have found that women, I'm talking in general now. Of course, I'm talking in general. I know that there are exceptions to this, are very good at persevering with the thing. Of course, women have a quality of responsiveness. That's a willingness to demonstrate their feelings, to react, to show warmth, to show affection. And of course, that makes them very vulnerable. You know, that courage that many women have to tell you how they feel. And when they feel weak, they're not proud and stuck up and won't give in to share with you how they're feeling. They express weakness and admit fear and are so vulnerable because they will ask for help before a man will. You take a man and he's got his family and he's going along and he's going to a certain place and he's lost the way, will he admit it? I tell you, some guys would go 100 miles before they'd say they were even lost. Ach no, it's just around the corner. No, I know where it is. And she is saying, look, there's a man walking along there. Just stop a minute and ask him. No. Nope. And when you do ask, you know, you're vulnerable, aren't you? Of course you are. Always remember that when God wants to make a man, he begins with his mother. So anybody who can influence women by speech or pen or education or example has an almost unrivaled power over the destinies of the human race. You know, here's an FA Cup final, and here's a guy in full flight, and he scores 3 times, and the cameras descend on him in a half of England as well, as he's coming off the pitch, and what are his first words? Hi, Mom. And again and again and again, you know, I was on a radio station in the city of Dunedin not very long ago, and there was a guy on before me who was a famous yachtsman or something in New Zealand, and they asked celebrities on to give their favorite recipe. And he was so keen that his mother would hear him. It was laughable. My mother lives down there, you know, in that city, and he was on from Wellington on the phone into this just before I came, and he had this wonderful recipe for whatever, but all he wanted was to get his mum to hear him read a recipe. And the guy must have been even older than me. It's true. It is only a very shallow and a very superficial critic who will sneer at a congregation with a lot of women in it. He's a fool. If he says, they're just a lot of women. Because there he has the hand that rocks the cradle that rules the world. In front of him, many an obscure woman has ruled the world through the child in which her noblest self has been reproduced. Don't you think there was a lot of Rachel in Joseph? Don't you think there was a lot of Jochebed in Moses? Don't you think there was a lot of Hannah in Samuel? Don't you think there was a lot of Elizabeth in John the Baptist? Don't you think there was a lot of Susanna in John Wesley? I went to hear Billy Graham one night in Windsor Park, and he had 50,000 people there, which was a good meeting, by any terms. And I remember him preach from John 3:16, and some of my friends were converted, and they're still going on for God. Back in 1960s it was, one night. Just. And I remember him tell how that his mother on the farm where he was brought up every Saturday night in North Carolina got out a big galvanized tub. And he said, because I was the eldest person in the family, I always got the fresh water. And she put me in the tub and she scrubbed me and she made me learn the words of John 3:16 until I could say them almost back to front. Well, you know, his mother went to a little assembly of Christians where my mum used to go in Boston many years ago. She used to go to the gospel meeting on a Sunday night, and there weren't many people there, I can tell you. It wasn't big crusades or big time evangelism. And yet that quiet little lady taught her son John 3 and 16, and the rest is history. Think of the influence of remarkable women. Joan of Arc, Margaret Thatcher, in the same breath. Amelia Earhart, Marie Curie, so on. And Esther. Esther. There are not many pages about Esther in the Bible. Not many pages about her. But what an influence she had. What an incredible influence she had. And what I want you to see is that your life can be extraordinary. And what I want you to see is that your life can be extraordinary. You say, me? You. What influence could I have, you say, in Ulster's future? A whole lot, because you are Ulster's future. If you aren't, then who is? You're part of it. You see, people say in their local churches, they complain about them and they say this is wrong and that's wrong and the other's wrong. And what they forget is the church they're complaining about, they belong to, and it's really themselves they're talking about, their church, of which they are a part. And we talk about Northern Ireland and all of its problems, but we can be part of the answer, not part of the problem. And that's why I want to encourage you, night after night, through these weeks, with this incredible story of one solitary life, right in the heart of modern-day Iran, with a leader just as despotic as any Ayatollah or any neighboring Saddam Hussein. Let's pick up the story in the powder room, as the Americans say. What's the king's command? Well, his decree is they're to look for Miss Persia. Not Miss World, Miss Persia. Now, the Persian Empire came from India to Ethiopia. And they were to find the best-looking girls from India to Ethiopia. I was in Singapore Airport, or Singapore City, just recently, and, you know, I was looking at some of those Indian people, Indian girls, and how beautiful they are. And I was thinking about them when I was thinking about Esther. They got all of the most beautiful girls in all of the country. What an awful king he was. Wasn't going to let anybody else have a nice girl before he could find her. He's cruel, you know. There's cruelty in this. Horrible. But that's the way it was, and God overruled even his cruelty. He got all these beautiful girls together, and Esther was picked to go along with them. And they're taken to the palace for a year. 1 year to be prepared to go in one by one to see him. Well, I don't want to appear too trite, you know, but the Avon lady would have had a ball, wouldn't she? If she'd been in there for a year. Because the girls were given beauty preparations daily right through the 12 months. 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with perfumes. Now, I'm told that women like Esther saturated their hair and their skin and pores with fumes from cosmetic burners. And, you know, it was very heavy. The air was very thick with these cosmetic burners, and they walked through it. You know how they say to women the best way to get saturated with perfume is spray it and then walk through it? Might be a good hint for us too, fellas. But that's what they did. These cosmetic burners and these perfumes, they drip with them. Virtually. And notice that these girls had every luxury. They could choose any adornment to enhance their beauty before they went in before the king. But when they came out from the king, you know, they were mere slaves. They awaited his pleasure, and he might never even remember them again. It sounded terrific, but it really wasn't. Notice the tremendous emphasis that is placed on the physical in these verses. This guy wants the most beautiful girl in the world, and nothing else will do. And he's prepared not even to look at her before she's prepared 12 months with cosmetics and oil of myrrh and so on. Don't you think that's typical of a pagan culture? The more pagan a country is, the more they accentuate the physical The further a nation gets away from God, the greater the multiplicity of beautifying treatments. Now, quite frankly, I think that some women would be greatly improved if they used a little makeup. I'm talking straight. I could maybe do with some myself. I agree with J. Vernon McGee when he says, some women who do not wear makeup look like witches to me. Well, that's pretty brave, isn't it? He was a very famous preacher, by the way. But on the other hand, please notice that Esther had qualities that any amount of cosmetics couldn't have given her. And that's the important thing. I flicked through a fashion magazine in preparing this message this week, and I wrote down some of the statements I found in the advertisements that they promised. You know, just a few, not to get sidetracked. Lacombe Paris, Metamorphosis. Yes. Autumn and Winter 1990 Makeup Collection. Metamorphose. Unexpected contrasts of subtle shades, a play of light and shadow, colors for a world beyond reality. Oh, goodness. What a promise. Présence. Made in France by Parfums Parquet. This is the line. If you have présence, you need nothing more. Well, that's a bit tall. Chanel number 19, witty. Confident. Goodness, how could a perfume be witty? And how could a perfume be confident? And then it says, devastatingly feminine. Well, I'll not go on and bore you. But look at the qualities that Esther showed apart from all those cosmetics. And that's why I have entitled this message, How You Can Be Beautiful Without Being Good Looking. Is that possible? Well, of course it is. You can be beautiful in your life and never come near cosmetics. In fact, you can dare to be a Daniel and dare to stand alone and dare to pass the chemist shop and call your face your own. Now imagine this harem of women. It must have been awful. All these girls in from all over the nation, all wanting to be Miss Persia, all wanting to be the next queen, waiting to go in for 1 year. Can you imagine the cattiness, the jealousy, the self-absorbed women of that harem? What a world that must have been. I mean, we have in Britain it's a horrible thing, really, that Miss World contest, isn't it? I know a fella, and he does the hairstyles there at times, and he talks to me about it, and what a rotten world it is. Jealousy and envy and fighting and all that. You can imagine how horrible it was. And yet, in the middle of that bunch, Esther's inner beauty eclipses the selfish world of the harem, and that's what caught Haggai's eye. Six, at least, attractive qualities stand out. 1, verse 9. It says in verse 9, The young woman pleased him. She obtained his favor. In Hebrew it says, she lifted up grace before his face. Isn't that lovely? She lifted up grace before his face. That quality had a lovely pleasantness in the presence of others. That lovely fragrant quality with that lovely aroma of grace in her attitude and spirit that prompted Haggai to act quickly and treat her preferentially. She lifted up grace before him. Is that what you and I do? Because you see, fellas, although this is primarily, this passage perhaps directed the application of it to women, these qualities that she had, which were inner qualities that no cosmetic could ever give, or no suit could ever give, or no car could ever give you, or no school tie could ever give you, or no holiday could ever give you, or no tan could ever give you, or no crowd that you run with could ever give you, or no club Mediterranean could ever give you, or goodness knows what. These lovely inner qualities that she had, you can have. Grace. How Mr. Buckley, for example, showed that lovely grace in his life. And he did. And he had no easier life than any of the rest of us. It had its pressures just like everybody else's. I often noticed his grace under pressure. That's a thing that you and I can have in our lives. Unfortunately, I don't always have it, or have it all too. Do I have it at all at times, I wonder? I hope so. But we should have it constantly. Lift up grace. Notice the second quality in her life in verse number 9, restraint and control. Esther, according to verse number 10, did not reveal that she was a Jew. S, or where she came from. She knew the value of verbal restraint. In other words, she didn't say, I'm a Jew, S. I come from the Jewish people, I'm a Hebrew. She didn't start preaching. Now, some people argue that she should, and that what she did was wrong in not saying who she was. But you know, folks, when you think about it in depth, in the situation she had to be very careful what she said. Because tens of thousands of her people were actually about to be slaughtered with a political policy of genocide like Hitler's against the Jews. Only Haman was the man. We'll hear about him next week. And Mordecai, her cousin who had raised her, had told her not to identify herself yet. The time would come, of course, when she would identify herself. Notice that that came later in her life. There was a time to speak. And when she spoke, then of course there were incredible repercussions. Notice verse 20 of the same chapter 2. Esther had not yet revealed her kindred and her people, just as Mordecai had charged her, for Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. Restraint and control. Don't you think, very quickly, don't you think, folks, there is a time to speak and a time to keep quiet? Even regarding spiritual things? Don't you think there is? Do you think you should always be preaching? Certainly not. But I do like this one. I do like this one. A pastor was honest enough to admit in an article he wrote for a Christian magazine that his grip on evangelism was embarrassingly weak. And he wrote this in a Christian magazine because it illustrates so well the problem all of us wrestle with. That is, when do you speak and when do you not speak for the Lord? When do you say, I'm a Christian and I belong to the Savior, and those are my people? I love this. Some of you may have heard it before, but it's worth reading again. This pastor was traveling on a plane, and he had an old pair of blue jeans on him, and he had boarded a plane to return home, and he settled into the last unoccupied seat next to a well-dressed businessman with a Wall Street Journal tucked under his arm. And the pastor, a little embarrassed over his casual attire, decided he'd look straight ahead and for sure stay out of any in-depth conversation. But the plan didn't work. The man greeted him, so to be polite, the pastor asked about the man's work. Here's what happened. "Well, I'm in the figure salon business. We can change a woman's self-concept by changing her body. It's really a very profound and powerful thing." His pride spoke between the lines. "You look my age," I said. "Have you been in this business long?" "Oh," he said, "I graduated from this university of business administration. They've given me so much responsibility already, I feel honored. In fact, I hope to eventually manage the western part of the operation." "So you're in a national organization?" I asked, becoming impressed despite myself. "Oh, we're the fastest growing company of our kind in the nation. It's really good to be a part of an organization like that, don't you think?" I nodded approvingly and thought, impressive, proud of his work and accomplishments. Why aren't Christians proud like that? Why are we so often apologetic about our faith and our church? Looking askance at my clothing, he asked the inevitable question, "And what do you do?" "Well, it's interesting that we have similar business interests," I said. "You're in the body-changing business, and I'm in the personality-changing business. We apply basic theocratic principles to accomplish indigenous personality modification." He was hooked, but I knew he would never admit it, for pride is very powerful. "You know, I've heard about that," he replied hesitatingly. "But don't you have an office here in the city?" "Oh, we have many offices. We've offices up and down here in the state. In fact, we're national. We have at least one office in every state of the union, including Alaska and Hawaii." He had a puzzled look on his face. He was searching his mind to identify this huge company he must have read about in the Wall Street Journal. "As a matter of fact," he said, "we've gone international, and management has a plan to put at least one office in every country of the world by the end of this business era." I paused. Do you have that in your business?" I asked. "Well, no, not yet," he answered. "But you mentioned management. How do they make it work?" "Oh, it's a family concern. There's a father and a son, and they run everything." "Must make a lot of capital," he asked skeptically. "You mean money?" I asked. "Yes, I suppose so. No one knows just how much it takes, but we never worry because there's never a shortage. In fact, the one who's in charge of the organization owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. "Oh, so he's into ranching too," said the businessman. "No, it's just a saying we have to indicate his wealth." "Oh," my friend sat back in his seat, musing over our conversation. "What about with you?" he asked. "The employees? Well, they're something to see," I said. "They have a spirit that pervades the organization. It works like this. The father and son love each other so much that their love filters down through it all, so that we all find ourselves loving one another too. I know this sounds old-fashioned in a world like ours, but I know people in the organization who are willing to die for me. Do you have that in your business?" I was almost shouting now. People were starting to shift noticeably in their seats in the plane. "Not yet," he said. Quickly changing strategies, he added, "But do you have good benefits?" "They're right out of this world," I said. "Do you have that in your business?" "Not yet," he answered wistfully. The light was dawning. "You know, one thing bothers me about all that you're saying. I've read the journals, and if your business is all you said is, 'Why haven't I heard about it before now?'" "That's a good question," I said. "After all, we have a 2,000-year-old tradition." "Wait a moment," he said. "You're right," I interrupted. "I'm talking about the church." "I knew it. You know, I'm Jewish." "Oh. Do you want to sign up?" I asked. "Now, that mightn't be the way you witness, but I'll tell you something. It was the time to speak, wasn't it?" She didn't speak at this moment, but we're going to see later on in our studies when she did. She showed restraint and control. Notice in verse 10b, she had a continually teachable spirit. When you link that up with the verse 20 that I read to you, when Mordecai raised her, she didn't get a big head when she became Miss Persia, which she became, and when she became queen of this vast empire, she didn't lose her head, she didn't lose her equilibrium and balance. She still listened to this man Mordecai. Becoming a finalist and even becoming queen didn't go to her head. I hope if you're having success, it's not going to your head. And if you've forgotten your grandmother at home and your mother and your father and your aunts and your uncles and your friends who have helped you and encouraged you along the way, I hope you haven't forgotten them. What a lovely quality in a woman of such stunning beauty. Because I tell you, she was the best looking woman in the entire empire. She was stunningly beautiful. But she had a student spirit and a willingness to listen and to learn. Sometimes the more gifted we are, you know, and the more physically endowed we are, the more popular we are, the more prominent we are in our positions, the less teachable we become. Just remember, none of your gifts, or none of mine, gives us a corner on wisdom. And notice that she was very modest. Authenticity. She was real. From verse 12 to verse 14, she wasn't given a credit card. She was given something with backing of money. She was basically said, you can have any dress you like. You can have any cosmetic you like. You can have any adornment you like. Go get it. Can you imagine what you would have done with that? No doubt most of the women went wild with it. I kind of feel they did, except for Esther, that is, because she's the only one it says of in the Bible in verse number 15. Just let me read it. When the turn came for Esther to go into the king, she requested nothing but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, the custodian of the women, advised. In other words, she didn't sort of burn, you know, sort of powder room slippers, charging out the door to get every dress and look at everything she could get her hands on. No, she said, what would you advise that I wear? See this modesty this girl has? And she was winsome, wasn't she? What a terrible circumstance. I mean, it's really ghastly when you think about it. What a horrible setup she was in. What a sensuous, horrible man. Ugh. You can think of the kind of mind he had and the kind of person he was, and yet God overruled. And she stood out like a stately swan in a duck pond. That's what she did. She was winsome. Charming, even in the midst of all of that. Don't you think the Christian church could do with a little charm? Don't you think they could? You read in the scriptures that the Christian church, in its early days, throughout all Judea and Samaria, enjoyed peace being built up and going on in the fear of the Lord and in the comfort of it, continued to increase. You would think like there was no persecution or nobody was getting murdered or there were no terrorists or there were no despots or there were no Saddam Husseins or there were no Hitlers or there were no whatever. I tell you, folks, they were flogging them and killing them and persecuting them all over the place. But it was that lovely, godly winsomeness that they had in the middle of it all. I know Ulster's full of trouble. I know there's sorrow all over the place. But that gives you and I, if we belong to the Lord, an opportunity to stand up and burn brightly for Him with modesty and authenticity. To be real. I hope that you and I will pray with all of our hearts that God will give us an abhorrence of the superficial. You don't want to just be superficial. You want to be, well, like the old spiritual says, I want to be a Christian in my heart. In my heart. I want to be a Christian in my heart. And in the midst of all of that, look at these qualities. There is a wee verse, and I promise you, this will not be long. 1 Peter 3. It's awful relevant. 1 Peter 3. Likewise, you wives, verse 1, be submissive to your husbands, that even if some of them don't obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. When they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear, don't let your beauty be that outward adorning of arranging the hair, of wearing gold, of the putting on of fine apparel. But let it be the hidden person of the heart with the incorruptible ornament of a gentle and a quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. Likewise, you husbands, dwell with them with understanding. Give honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered. The beauty of the inner self. Number one, appearance. Now, just a minute. I know that a lot of preachers have gone nuts virtually preaching this. And they say, a woman's not allowed to wear jewelry. A woman's not allowed to adorn her hair or plait her hair or whatever in a very special way, etc. You mustn't braid your hair. You mustn't wear gold jewelry. It's carnal, they say. And let's take that logic through the verse. Verse 3, don't let your beauty be the outward adorning of arranging the hair, of wearing gold, or putting on of apparel. Well, if you carry that logic through, then you don't put on any dress. You wouldn't want to go out in the nude, would you? Carry the logic through. That's not what it's saying. I've never heard a preacher encourage nudity. But if he presses his forced logic, that's next. This passage isn't slandering cosmetics or telling you to look drab and miserable. It's encouraging you to keep the balance. A man doesn't find his wife interesting if she smells as if she's just got dipped in Dettol and if she goes around like an unmade bed. And of course, to have a meek and a quiet spirit, for sure, have that inner quality, but don't stop when you get to the outside and look terrible. Keep the balance. Keep the balance. The beauty is not in the cosmetics or in the fine apparel or the gold that you wear. If you dress to draw attention to yourself, that's a wrong motivation. That's not modesty. Dress attractively, but not to draw attention to yourself. And notice the second quality is attitude, the hidden person of the heart. The imperishable quality of a gentle, quiet spirit. It's precious, says the Bible, in the sight of God. Precious faith, verse 17. Precious blood, verse 19. Precious attitude, verse 4. Of chapter 3. 1:17, precious faith. 1:19, precious blood. Chapter 3, verse 4, precious attitude. Your attitude's important. Strength and dignity are her clothing, is the woman of Proverbs 31. It's a picture of unusual beauty, of character, of confidence. She isn't a shallow woman. She isn't a loud woman. She isn't a cheap woman. She's got class, as God sees it. Is that weak? People who are in control of themselves and free from panic and irritation? Most people lead lives of quiet desperation. But not this woman. She's got strength. Hidden person of the heart. Knows the Lord. Following His principles. And that's far more important. Far more beautiful. Will make you more beautiful in every way than any old perfume could. Or the best dress or suit or whatever you could wear. And in verse 5 and verse 6, you know, she responded, didn't she, to Abraham? She didn't leave him a note and say, mutton pie on the stove oven, gone to Tuesday night at the Bethel, took the small chariot, I'll be home late, don't worry, be sure to give Ishmael herbs for his cough at sundown and give Isaac a bath. Signed, Sarah, P.S., don't forget to close all the flaps when you go to bed, sandstorm is coming. It's not in there, is it? She responded to him. Look what happened. She became such a wonderful woman of faith. And what about the men? Well, you're to dwell with your wife, husband, according to... It says dwell with your wife. You say, but I do. I sleep in the same bed. I come home every night to the same house. But do you dwell with her? That is, dwell with her according to knowledge. Do you know what your wife's deepest problem is at the moment? Have you done anything about it? Do you know what her biggest heartache is? Are you trying to help? Do you know what kind of a week she has? How she's feeling tonight? How she will be? What perhaps you could do to help her? A husband is not somebody who dominates his wife. A manager, you know, the husband is the head of the house, but a manager in a business doesn't go around trying to do everything. Keeps his eye on things and helps where he can. Know your wife. A wife longs to be understood, and that's what husbands must do. Is know their wives and dwell with them according to knowledge and honor them. What lovely qualities. You say, can I have them? In Christ you can have them all. And if you know the Lord in your heart, all these lovely things can be hidden in your heart and come out in your life. The living Christ can make you beautiful. And your life count so that people say, I'm glad that girl came into our house. I'm glad that fella crossed my path. So you can be beautiful without being good looking. Think about Esther. And the Lord bless you. And next week, there's more.